the.ca for those of you listening in through the web. We are located in the lower level of Carruthers Hall on the beautiful Queen's campus. My name is May, and you are now listening to What's Brewing. So this week is very electropop heavy, and not necessarily on purpose, but I'm not upset about it. To get right into things, we're going to start out with Cleopatric and Burner Phone. This is off of their newly released EP of the same name that came out October 24th. This is a Coburg-based duo, and this is in anticipation of their new album / mixtape Scrap, which is a bunch of scraps that have never made it onto albums throughout the years. They're playing a Toronto show on December 4th at History, which is one of their only Canadian dates in recent years, and they're releasing the Scrap mixtape on December 5th. After that, we have Love with Sister Era. This is off of the EP of the same name that released on October 10th. Love is from the Poundmaker Cree Nation in Saskatchewan, and has very much a UK soul-inspired sound. Think Amy Winehouse or Adele. This EP is a celebration of her journey and the strong maternal figures around her, and the track specifically dances between girlhood and womanhood, joy and release, strength and softness, and she has a debut album on the way this spring with an all-Cree single, Machi Nimitau, coming soon. I'm sorry if I mispronounced that. And finally, we're going to head into our last song of that set with Marze and False Icon, released on October 22nd as a single. She is a Montreal, LA-based dark electro-pop artist. The song lyrics and aesthetics draw from the drama and camp of 80s synth-pop and body horror films, and it's calling out manipulators in the industry who create the illusion of connection to lift themselves up without regard for those around them. So without further ado, we're going to kick things off with Cleopatric and Burner Phone right here on What's Brewing, CFRC 101.9.
Big friends is new sense. give yourself a break. You're looking hard. Oh, come and feel the glow. Live the moment of your sister.
Finish listening to Marze with False Icon. Before that, we had Sister Era by Love, L-O-V. And at the very top of that set, we had Cleopatra with Burner Phone right here on What's Brewing, CFRC 101.9 FM. Coming up next, we have Allegories with Baker's Lung. This was released as a single on September 30th. This is a Hamilton-based duo that started out as an experimental noise project that reemerged as more electropop. And this song is a rumination on mortality, meaning, and the elusive pursuit of fulfillment. After that, we have Daria Colonna with Ce Qui Tombe, which released as a single on October 9th. This is a Montreal-based artist, and it is melancholic electropop. She's also a Canadian poet, and this song talks about the ruins of every day, a generation born after life invited to applaud the inherited rubble and faces head-on the collapsing and what we try to hold on to. This is in anticipation of her upcoming EP, Rien de Grave, coming November 14th, which is co-created by multi-instrumentalist Vince James, and she has an album coming in winter of 2026. 6. And then finally, we're going to finish things off with Fleur Electra with Could Be Better, released as a single on October 2nd. She's a Toronto-based artist, originally from Saskatoon or small town Saskatchewan. She's more alt-synth infused dream pop. She's a singer-songwriter, producer, and performer, and her next single, Strike the Match, is out November 6th. So if you enjoy this track, definitely follow up for that one. So without further ado, here's Allegories with Baker's Lung right here on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Thank you. I could tell you won't be seeing me ever again. You picked up the phone, hopped onto the streetcar. 6 days come to think of it, I thought you'd surprise me, but guess I'm wrong. So you could pretend that I'm out of your head. You took too much time, you wanted more pleasure. Do you feel like you do what you want? No obligation, I'm not what you need. But you can make me better. Makes you feel better. Makes you feel better. Just you wanna say, make me feel better. It could be
Fleur Electra with Could Be Better. Before that, we had Sick You Tom by Daria Colonna. And at the very top of that set, Allegories with Baker's Lung right here on What's Brewing, CFRC 101.9 FM. Coming up with our last two songs here, we're going to start it off with Tallulah Argue with Tough As They Make 'Em. Released as a single on October 16th, this is a Toronto-born, London-based artist who leans more alt-pop country sleaze. She has a lot of tongue-in-cheek lyrics about life and love, and she's playing a couple homecoming shows, including a November 1st gig at the Horseshoe Tavern in Toronto. After that, we're going to close things out with Maddie Sun and Big Star. This is off of her newest album, The Pages, released on October 2nd. She's Cranbrook, BC based, and she leans more mountain rock and roll and folk. This album is written like a musical journal, with each song representing a different story or page, and it talks about the Big Star dreams she had growing up, and her way to accomplish them now. So without further ado, we're going to kick things off with Tallulah Argue and Tough As They Make 'Em right here on What's Brewing, CFRC 101.9 FM. Be sure to tune in next week for more fresh Canadian finds.
something bigger, something better. Mountains can't hold her, so she searches for the city pleasures. For circle, she wrote in her journal, I'ma be a great big star someday. Who's got the power to say how it's gonna go, what's coming home?
FM, www.cfrc.ca, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
No a la guerra, no a la guerra, not war, not war, not war. Just peace, just peace, just peace, forever, 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 peace forever.
The Trump administration escalates threats of war against Venezuela and Latin America, deploying the world's largest aircraft carrier and some 10,000 troops after carrying out its eighth strike against so-called drug traffickers in the Caribbean, killing at least 40. We'll get an update. Then, will the ceasefire in Gaza hold? How is Palestinian leadership organizing? We'll speak with DropSite News' Jeremy Scahill.
While the acute phase of the genocide may have ended for now, we should not be under any illusion that this is the end of the war. Israel's annihilationist agenda remains in place, and Donald Trump and his corporate and government cronies remain focused on trying to privatize Gaza and make as much money off of this genocide as possible.
And here in New York, early voting's underway in the city's mayoral race, where a record 164,000 people cast ballots on the first 2 days. The frontrunner, Democratic Socialist mayoral candidate Zohran Mamdani, would be the city's first Muslim mayor.
To be Muslim in New York is to expect indignity. But indignity does not make us distinct. There are many New Yorkers who face it. It is the tolerance of that indignity that does.
We'll speak with the New York Times opinion page staff editor, Mehmed. Her latest piece, When I Look at Zohran Mamdani, Here's What I See. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Venezuela's denouncing the U.S. for docking a United States warship in Trinidad and Tobago as tensions in the region continue to rise. The Pentagon's also sending the world's largest aircraft carrier, the USS Gerald R. Ford, to the Caribbean. The carrier can hold 90 airplanes and attack helicopters on Friday. The Pentagon announced the U.S. had struck yet another vessel in the Caribbean, killing 6 people. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth said the victims were suspected drug traffickers, but offered no proof. Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro accused President Trump of fabricating a war.
And the people of the United States know that they're making up a new eternal war. They promised that they will never enter a war, and they're making up a war that we will avoid. How? With the mobilization of the peoples of South America. As South America and the Caribbean all say, no to war, yes to peace, yes to prosperity, yes to harmony, and living together.
On Friday, the Trump administration sanctioned Colombian President Gustavo Petro, his wife, and other Colombian officials. In recent weeks, Petro's denounced the U.S. attacks on boats in the Caribbean. Also on Friday, 10 former Caribbean leaders denounced Trump's military escalation in the region. The former leaders wrote, quote, "The gravity of the present signals demand we use all existing channels for dialogue to perpetuate a zone of peace," unquote. We'll have more on this story after headlines. An Israeli drone strike in southern Gaza has killed 2 people as Israel continues to attack Palestinians 2 weeks after the U.S. brokered ceasefire went into effect. Officials in Gaza say Israel's killed about 100 Palestinians over the past 2 weeks. Meanwhile, Israel's continuing to limit aid into the famine-stricken Gaza Strip. This all comes as Hamas is expanding its search for the remains of 13 deceased Israeli hostages in Gaza. Over the weekend, a team from Egypt and the Red Cross entered Gaza to help with the search. We'll have more on Gaza later in the program. We'll speak with DropSite News's Jeremy Scahill. On Sunday, Israel carried out multiple strikes in Lebanon, killing 3 people. UN peacekeeping forces in Lebanon also shot down an Israeli drone. The UN forces said the drone had dropped a grenade near the peacekeepers. Israel denied the claim. The U.S. federal government shutdown has entered its 27th day. Funding for food assistance programs used by over 40 million people will run out on Saturday. Democratic lawmakers have criticized the Trump administration for refusing to draw on a contingency fund to continue funding SNAP and WIC benefits. Meanwhile, President Trump has said military troops will keep getting paid, in part due to a $130 million private donation. The New York Times has revealed the donor to be the reclusive right-wing billionaire Timothy Mellon. Budget experts say using a private donation to pay troops would violate federal law. Meanwhile, Democratic Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut appeared on CNN Sunday and said Trump is using the shutdown to expand his power.
He likes the fact that the government is closed because he thinks he can exercise king-like powers. He can open up the parts of the government that he wants. He can pay the employees who are loyal to him. I mean, this is a leader who is trying to transition our government from a democracy to something much closer to a totalitarian state.
President Trump has arrived in Japan, the second stop in his Asia trip. On the flight to Japan, Trump refused to rule out running for a third term in 2028, even though the 22nd Amendment forbids a president from being elected to office more than twice. On Sunday, Trump met in Malaysia with the leaders of Thailand and Cambodia, who signed a deal to expand their ceasefire. On Thursday, Trump will meet with Chinese President Xi Jinping in South Korea during the APEC summit. Over the weekend, the U.S. and China agreed to the framework of a new trade deal. On Saturday, over 1,000 South Korean protesters rallied in Seoul to protest ahead of Trump's arrival.
At a time when our country should be focused on managing our own finances, the U.S. is acting like a robber, sudden, coercive, and almost plundering us, asking us to invest $350 billion, which is an absurd amount, and nearly 80% of our foreign reserves in the U.S. all of a sudden is far too forceful. I believe South Korea should firmly express its refusal to this demand.
In other trade news, President Trump's announced he's raising tariffs on Canada by 10%. The move coming in response to an ad produced by the government of Ontario that featured a clip of former President Ronald Reagan warning of the dire consequences of high tariffs. In Argentina, far-right President Javier Milei's party won a decisive victory in Argentina's midterm elections, picking up 14 seats in the Senate, 64 in the lower house of Congress. But it's still short of a congressional majority for Milei's party. It comes after President Trump earlier this month promised a $40 billion bailout for Argentina if Milei's party was victorious in these elections. After the results, Trump told reporters, quote, "We've made a lot of money based on that election," unquote. Since taking office in 2023, Milei has imposed painful austerity measures on Argentina, slashing thousands of government jobs and curbing public investments in infrastructure, healthcare, and education, which led to widespread protests. Earlier this year, Milei appeared on stage with Elon Musk at the conservative CPAC conference in the U.S., wielding a chainsaw and giving it to Elon Musk to symbolize cuts to government programs. Voters in Ireland have elected the independent socialist Catherine Connolly to be president. Connolly's a critic of NATO, who's accused the United States and Britain of enabling genocide in Gaza. She spoke to supporters in Dublin Saturday.
"I will be a president who listens and who reflects and who speaks when it's necessary, and a voice for peace, a voice that builds on our policy of neutrality, a voice that articulates the existential threat posed by climate change."
The United Nations is calling for the safe passage of civilians trapped in Al-Fashir in Sudan's Darfur region after the UAE-backed paramilitary Rapid Support Forces, RSF, announced they've seized the Sudanese army's main base in Al-Fashir. The Sudanese army has yet to acknowledge they've lost control of Al-Fashir. The city's been besieged by the RSF for 18 months, leading to widespread famine. The civil war in Sudan erupted in 2023. Since then, more than 150,000 people have died across the country, and about 12 million have fled their homes. Hurricane Melissa has intensified to a rare Category 5 hurricane, expected to make landfall in Jamaica Tuesday and pass through Cuba and the Bahamas later this week. Melissa could be the most powerful storm to hit Jamaica in recent years. The U.S. National Hurricane Center in Miami warned Jamaicans to remain sheltered during the storm. Forecasters are warning of catastrophic flash flooding and landslides throughout the Caribbean. In Virginia, a 24-year-old Honduran man was fatally struck by a vehicle while fleeing federal immigration agents Thursday. Josue Castro Rivera is at least the fourth immigrant to be killed during an immigration operation under the Trump administration. Meanwhile, protests are continuing in Chicago over ongoing ICE raids. On Saturday in northwest Chicago, federal agents deployed tear gas at residents who gathered to protest ICE ICE activity. The incident occurred as parents and children in the neighborhood were preparing for a Halloween parade. Meanwhile, White House advisor Stephen Miller appeared on Fox News Friday suggesting Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker could be arrested for seditious conspiracy for obstructing the enforcement of federal immigration laws.
Different kinds of crimes would apply. There is obstruction of justice. There is harboring illegal aliens. There is impeding the enforcement of our immigration laws. And then as you get up the scale of behavior, you obviously get into seditious conspiracy charges, depending on the conduct, and many other offenses.
A federal judge has ruled ICE agents illegally detained a Chicago man whose daughter is undergoing cancer treatment. Ruben Torres Maldonado is a painter and home renovator who was detained by immigration authorities at a Home Depot in suburban Chicago earlier this month. In his ruling, U.S. District Judge Jeremy Daniel said Maldonado's detention violated his due process rights and that he must be given a bond hearing by October 31st. In Maryland, hundreds of activists and Democratic state legislators rallied in Annapolis Saturday, calling on Governor Westmore to end the state's contract with Avelo Airlines, a private airline carrying out deportation flights. Avelo has cut several routes amidst growing backlash and a nationwide boycott after it signed a $150 million contract with ICE earlier this year. This is Maryland State Senator Clarence Lamb.
When it comes to the state of Maryland, we have this airline that's flying through BWI Airport that we don't believe shares our values. And so anything that we can do to shut down these ICE flights, many of which are probably illegal, as we've seen from Supreme Court determinations, that we want to do our part. And if we can stop Avelo from flying out of BWI, that would be all the better for our state.
U.S. immigration authorities detained the prominent British Muslim journalist and commentator Sami Hamdi on Sunday at San Francisco International Airport. Hamdi was detained hours after he spoke in Sacramento at a gala for CARE. That's the Council on American Islamic Relations. In a statement, CARE said, quote, abducting a prominent British Muslim journalist and political commentator on a speaking tour in the United States because he dared to criticize the Israeli government's genocide is a blatant affront to free speech, CARE said. The far-right activist Lara Loomer, who's described herself as a proud Islamophobe, took credit for his detention, saying she'd pressured the Trump administration to revoke his visa. And here in New York, Democratic Socialist mayoral candidate Sohrab Mamdani spoke before 13,000 supporters in Forest Hill, Queens on Sunday night.
Together, New York, we're going to freeze the... Together, New York, we're going to make buses fast and... Together, New York, we're going to deliver universal. We will make our city one where every person who calls it home can live a dignified life.
Mamdani spoke alongside Senator Bernie Sanders, New York Congressmember Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and New York Governor Kathy Hochul, who's endorsed Mamdani over former Governor Andrew Cuomo. In recent days, Mamdani has repeatedly faced a string of Islamophobic attacks. If elected, Mamdani would be the first Muslim mayor. Early voting began on Saturday. A record 164,000 people cast ballots on the first few days. In a late endorsement, Democratic Congressmember Hakeem Jeffries has also backed Mamdani. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We begin today's show looking at the Trump administration's escalating threats of war against Venezuela and the region. On Sunday, the U.S. docked a warship in Trinidad and Tobago. The Pentagon's also deployed the world's largest aircraft carrier, the USS Gerald R. Ford, which can hold at least 90 airplanes and attack helicopters, with Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro accusing the Trump administration of fabricating a new eternal war.
And the people of the United States know that they're making up a new eternal war. They promised that they will never enter a war, and they're making up a war that we will avoid. How? With the mobilization of the peoples of South America. As South America and the Caribbean all say, no to war, yes to peace, yes to prosperity, yes to harmony, and living together.
There are approximately 10,000 U.S. troops, both at sea and on shore in the Caribbean, many stationed in Puerto Rico. Meanwhile, Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth Friday confirmed the U.S. had struck another vessel in the Caribbean, killing at least six people, whom Hegseth accused without evidence of being drug traffickers. The U.S. has carried out at least eight naval strikes on boats in the Caribbean and two others on vessels in the Pacific Ocean, killing over altogether 40 people. The Trump administration Friday also announced sanctions against Colombian President Gustavo Petro, his family, as well as Colombian Interior Minister, swelling tensions between the U.S. and Colombia. Last week, Petro recalled Colombia's ambassador to the U.S. back to Bogota and recently accused the U.S. of committing murder for killing a Colombian fisherman in one of the Trump administration's boat attacks on the Caribbean in mid-September. Trump responded by calling Petro a lunatic and a, quote, illegal drug leader. Petro has also blasted the U.S. for attempting to destabilize the region under the guise of combating drug trafficking. President Petro spoke at a massive rally in Bogota Friday following news of the U.S. sanctions against him.
Pues de ahí tenemos que aprender.
To the current government of Donald Trump, we must not respond by kneeling. We must respond, as humanity has already done, by standing firm and taking to the streets to defend people's rights, the rights of democracy, not to be governed by tyrannies. I've never done business. I don't have a dollar in the United States. There's no account to freeze. I have no desire, and I never will, to do business in the United States.
For more, we're joined in our New York studio by Alejandro Velasco, associate professor at NYU, where he's a historian of modern Latin America. Antonio Velasco is a former executive editor of NACLA Report on the Americas and author of Barrio Rising, Urban Popular Politics and the Making of Modern Venezuela. He was born and raised in Venezuela. Professor Alejandro Velasco, it's great to have you with us. Let's start off with the latest U.S. attack, bringing to 10 the number of vessels the U.S. has bombed in the Caribbean and the Pacific.
It's horrifying on so many levels. On the one hand, of course, we have these competing interests that are, in fact, converging within the Trump administration. You have those who are intent on ousting the Venezuelan government, especially Marco Rubio. You have Pete Hegseth, who's intent on starting war, even though Trump has said that he doesn't want to start wars. You have expat oppositions, including Maria Corina Machado, who has openly said that they want an intervention and then to be able to provide the United States with Venezuela's oil.
Who just won the Nobel Peace Prize. President Trump should win the Nobel
Peace
Prize.
In fact, said that it should have been him and that she gave the award to him on his honor. And so all of these competing and conflicting interests that in other situations might not in fact align are seeing Venezuela as an instrumental piece in order to achieve their own particular ends. And of course, who's left out of this equation are Venezuelans in Venezuela, who would suffer tremendously the brunt of a chaotic invasion.
I wanted to turn to President Trump last week, asserting he had the authority to continue to launch airstrikes against boats in international waters without a congressional declaration of war.
I don't think we're going to necessarily ask for a declaration of war. I think we're just going to kill people that are bringing drugs into our country. Okay? We're going to kill them. You know, they're going to be like dead.
We're just going to kill them. They're going to be like dead. I mean, even Republican Congressman Rand Paul, the Kentucky senator, objected, speaking on Fox News Sunday.
The Constitution says that when you go to war, Congress has to vote on it. And during a war, then, there's a lower rules for engagement. People do sometimes get killed without due process. But the drug war or the crime war has typically been something we do through law enforcement. And so far, they have alleged that these people are drug dealers. No one said their name. No one said what evidence. No one said whether they're armed. And we've had no evidence presented. So at this point, I would call them extrajudicial killings. And And this is akin to what China does, to Iran does with drug dealers. They summarily execute people without presenting evidence to the public, so it's wrong.
Just to be clear, that's Republican Senator Rand Paul. Professor Alejandro Velasco, your response. Again, they haven't pretended even to present evidence on either the strikes in the Pacific or in the Caribbean, the number of people killed, at least 40 at this point.
Part of it is a show of force, not only to Venezuela and the region, but it's also a show of force domestically to opponents in the United States whose activism is increasing, to say that they are, in fact, above the law, that they do not care about the law. Yes, they can, you know, talk about what and how this fits into particular frameworks of the past and precedent. But the reality is that you even now have Republicans coming out and saying, no, this is not only illegal, but this is in the context of lack of oversight, extrajudicial killings.
So talk about the sanctioning also of Colombia at the same time. I mean, escalating pressure in all of these areas. And Secretary of State and National Security Advisor Marco Rubio, who had that double title before, I think it was Henry Kissinger.
That's right.
Now wielding immense power. He has had a long time vendetta against Nicolas Maduro. Talk about how much power he's wielding at this point. As President Trump in the last few hours said something like, or refused to rule out a run himself for president. He also talked about Marco Rubio, J.D. Vance as a team for the 28 election.
No, absolutely. What's fascinating and disturbing about Marco Rubio is that his animosity towards Venezuela, his sort of centered-mindedness on Venezuela and ousting the government certainly precedes Maduro. It goes all the way back to Chavez. And what he has discovered now with the power that he has is that his agenda, which is primarily ideological, he primarily just wants to get rid of the Cuban government, right? That this has long been his primary mission.
He's Cuban-American.
He is Cuban-American. And so he knows that he can't sell Trump on ideology. He can't sell Trump on the idea we're going to commit troops, you're going to commit a ground invasion just on the basis of ousting a communist. So he has to find other ways to do that, and he's found it through drugs, right? But in order to make that more of a credible threat, he also has to tie it to Colombia, which is a major drug producer in the way that Venezuela is not. So in some ways, Petro here has become involved in this larger kind of effort to frame what's going on in the Caribbean and in Venezuela in particular as a larger war on drugs, when in fact it's primarily Marco Rubio's ideological project.
So the increased sanctions on Petro, his wife, and others in the Colombian government. Also, Petro has been fierce around criticizing Israel on Gaza. Do you think that plays in?
It does, only insofar as it allows for this narrative to cement itself. But in fact, Marco Rubio, because he is the one that's driving this policy, all he wants to do is to oust the government in Venezuela in order to then oust the government in Cuba. He needs to oust the government in Venezuela to show Trump that this is something that we can do, and we can do it so easily. And as a result, there's nothing that Cuba can provide us. Venezuela can provide us oil. Cuba can provide us nothing, but it's okay because we've got this.
I also want to talk about Argentina. The far-right president, Javier Milei's party, won a decisive victory in Argentina's midterm elections yesterday, picking up 14 seats in the Senate, 64 in the lower house of Congress, still short of a congressional majority for Milei's party. It comes after Trump earlier this month promised a $40 billion bailout for Argentina if Milei's party was victorious. Now, Trump told reporters, quote, "We've made a lot of money based on that election." Since taking office in 2023, Milei has imposed painful austerity measures in Argentina, slashing thousands of jobs, curbing public investments in infrastructure, healthcare, and education, which have led to widespread protests. So go to what is happening here. I mean, here in the U.S., millions face losing food benefits, health benefits, but President Trump is promising It's $20 billion of government aid, and then supposedly Bessent and his friends, the Treasury Secretary, will give another $20 billion and make money at the same time. What about Trump saying he's going to make money out of this?
I mean, it's so brazen, right? And we've seen this as Trump's MO. But it also speaks to a larger and more troubling reality, which is that he's at the same time building, in fact, a global Trumpist coalition. Milei has absolutely bought into it. There are others in Ecuador and in other parts of Latin America, obviously in El Salvador, who very much fashion themselves as Trumpists in a different place. And what's fascinating, of course, is that this completely belies the discourse of people like Rubio and others that we're intervening in Venezuela in order to promote democracy. Of course, what they're promoting is a Trumpist version of an entirely materially interested, foreign policy and domestic policy agenda. And so, you know, what's surprising about the case of Argentina is that it's not the first time that the United States has essentially extorted Latin American voters by promising massive amounts of deal in order to have a particular electoral result. This happened in Panama. This happened in Nicaragua in 1990 before the referendum there that, ousted the Sandinista government. And so this is a well-worn pattern in Latin America with the United States.
Well, I want to thank you for being with us. We continue to cover this. Alejandro Velasco, associate professor at New York University, NYU, where he's a historian of modern Latin America, former executive editor of NACLA, the report on the Americas, and author of Barrio Rising, Urban Popular Politics and the Making of Modern Venezuela, born and raised in Venezuela. Up next, will the ceasefire in Gaza hold? How is the Palestinian leadership organizing for the next phase of the deal? We'll speak with Dropsite News' Jeremy Scahill. Stay with us. Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We turn now to Gaza, where Israel's carried out repeated attacks, killing about 100 Palestinians over the past 2 weeks since the U.S.-backed ceasefire deal with Hamas came into effect. Israel's also continued to restrict the entry of humanitarian aid into Gaza in defiance of a ruling last week by the International Court of Justice, as Palestinian families are still in urgent need of food, clean water, fuel, and shelter. Instead of the approximately 600 aid trucks per day pledged by Israel, it's reportedly allowing in only about 80 to 90 trucks a day. As part of the truce, Hamas released all the Israeli hostages, agreed to release the bodies of deceased hostages. Hamas says it's working with the Red Cross and others to search for the remaining bodies. The main group representing families of hostages is calling on Israel to refuse to proceed to the next phase of the truce until the final 13 hostages' bodies are returned. This is Israeli government spokesperson Shash Bedrosian.
What I can share with you is the team is using between 2 to 3 excavator machines and 2 to 3 trucks.